If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Sam Matterface, in for Jim White. And today, myself, Simon and Paul Ince discuss the Manchester derby and City's commanding display, which saw them defeat Manchester United at the Etihad. It used to be a fierce rivalry, but has the fixture become far too predictable? Meanwhile, there were some ugly scenes at the City ground, with Forest owner Evangelos Marinakis confronting the referee after losing controversially to Liverpool in injury time. What did the former Palace chairman, Simon, make of that? Plus, World Cup winner Paul Pogba faces a four-year ban, which could ultimately end his career. Is he football's biggest wasted talent? This is Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Manchester City 3, Manchester United 1. The same old story for the visitors when it comes to Derby Day here at the Etihad.
Manchester United yesterday, your old team, set themselves up to restrict and try and control. Do you feel it was inevitable, though, that City would win, even though Manchester United took the lead?
Yeah, listen, I think so. I mean, it's a hard one. I think when you look at the way United set up, it actually shows the difference between the two sides. I just go back to when we used to play Manchester City, or Liverpool, or those teams. It was like, who's the better team? They're supposed to just go for it, OK? Man United can't do that at the moment, you know? They're so far away from Manchester City, as far as a club, as far as recruitment, as far as players. That's the only way they could go. There's no other way. There's no point in Ten Hag going, we're going to go to the Etihad and go toe-to-toe with Manchester City. Just can't happen. You get your pants pulled down, you get beat 4-5-0. So that was the only plan that he could go with. And for a certain while, it looked like it was going to work, didn't it? Mm. But you can't keep sitting back eventually against those teams because players get tired. And that's what we saw yesterday. Once they got the first goal, which was a wonderful goal from Foden, there was no plan B. Even when they went 2-1 down, there was no plan B. So I think, listen, it was a performance of...
Is that a sad indictment of the coach or a sad indictment of the situation that Manchester United are in and how far they've fallen?
It's not a case of how far they've fallen. You know what I mean? It's a case of, can they get... I mean, I hear Jim Ratcliffe saying about, you know, catching up to Manchester City in 2-3 years' time. It's not just Manchester City. There's Liverpool, there's Arsenal, there's Tottenham, there's Villa. There's all these other teams they've got to catch up with because they're miles behind these teams. But that's where they are at the moment. And is it a sad indictment? Yes, it is. Because every time you see these, excuse me, these big games, these heavyweight games, you want to see them go toe-to-toe. Mate United can't do that. City and Arsenal can do it. Liverpool and City can do it. But Mate United are not there yet.
If you were Sir Jim Ratcliffe, did you learn anything yesterday? Or did you sort of just... Or was the realisation that you're so far off the pace already there?
But I don't think you should be looking at it as a sad indictment of Manchester United. I think you should be looking at it as the quality of Manchester City. Manchester City are the best team in Europe. Manchester City, in my view, will probably win the Champions League and the Premier League and cement that position. If you look at the two sides, if you want to create this silly narrative that this was a game between two equals and that Man United should turn up in this game and give Man City a bloody nose, then it's a stupid conversation because there's not a player in the Man United side that you'd swap.
Yeah, but Manchester United fans won't feel like that. They want their team to go into a derby
and
compete.
But that's fine. But you have to be realistic about it. If you create ridiculous scenarios like VAR is going to get everything 100% right, and when it doesn't get 100% right, people start criticising it. If you walk into a game, most Man United fans, besides pride, would have expected to have gotten a hiding from Man City yesterday. And they duly did. They competed for certain factions of the game. But Paul's absolutely right. What is the point of going into a game? There's not a single Man United player that would go into that Man City side right now. So you're looking at you're being completely outmaneuvered, outmanned, outthought and outplayed in every department. And you might get a day where Man City are 10% off and you're at your best and you get a result. In this instance, what you've got is if you open this game up and you're brave and you play on the front foot, you're going to get beat 5 or 6 by a team that's superior. So what's the point? So Man United did what Man United could do in this game, which is suppress some of the opportunities that Man City had. OK, there's some glaring sitters that were missed by people like Erling Haaland that would have put the game earlier into condition. But the fact of the matter is that Man United is not a progress report that Jim Radcliffe needs to write now. Jim Radcliffe is in the door, looking at the situation, evaluating what's going to be. They need to change their recruitment policy, they need to remove some personnel, and they need to install a new culture in there, the culture that was there when he played for Man United, the culture that's there now.
So when he says, and he did this last week, that it'll be 2 or 3 years before we start changing, we want to be knocking City off their perch in that time frame, is that realistic or delusion?
Well, I'm not sure if it's realistic, because I think if you actually analyse... the Man United team now, and Simon just said it, you know, not one of those players would probably get into the City team or even the Liverpool team. Not just, you know, so if you analyse the whole team, I thought Onana was very good yesterday, the goalkeeper. I thought he played very, very well.
Do you not think he was down for the third goal?
Yeah, I think...
For the second goal. Sorry.
Second goal, yeah, I think he could have got done better with that. But apart from that, he made some really good saves. But if you actually go from 1 to 11, you know, in old school terms, numbers, then how many of those players are going to be at United in 2-3 years' time? I don't see many of them. I really, really don't. Maguire, done very well to get back in the side, but they wanted to sell him at the start of the season. Lindros is going to be a no. Martinez is always injured. You know, Wan-Bissaka is always injured. You know, so go through the whole team. It's only probably Hoyland that you'll probably keep. You think, yeah, potentially you can go and be a very good player. Rashford, I think, needs a fresh start. I honestly believe that.
I agree.
You know, so you're talking about a whole... It's not like where you've got a team as a manager where you've got a nucleus. You've got a spine where you can go, right, we can build around that. Mate, not having got a spine.
But also you need to price it. When you talk about this, first of all, you do not want the Premier League dominated by one side, whoever that side is, because then it turns it into the Bundesliga and it becomes less commercially valuable. But the key component to whether Man City will continue to be this dominant force is Pep Guardiola. If he steps out of that dugout, we'll start to go into a different cycle, and it'll be interesting to see if Man City can maintain the same quality. You've got players that are getting older, like Kevin De Bruyne, that will not be there in 2 or 3 years' time at the same level.
That's one of the beauties of Bayern Munich, that they do manage to maintain their dominance, despite the fact they keep changing
but
manager.
I don't think the Bundesliga, with due respect, compares to the Premier League in terms of its competitivity. Hence the reasons why Bayern Munich have won it for 11 years, and now they may well lose it this year.
We don't want to get to that stage.
And they nearly lost it last year as well, you know, to be fair.
Last
but the point is that there are various factors that come into play. If the big thing at Man United has been poor recruitment and poor culture, because it's not been focused on because people have got other agendas, which is pocketing the money that Man United brings, if you bring Radcliffe in and he focuses, and I'm not suggesting that Dave Brailsford is a cure for all ills, he's not a panacea. Some of the things he says border upon David Brentisk, but some of the things he does about marginal gains will have benefits. So if you focus on this area, you would expect Man United to make exponential gains by the very nature of breaking up some of the culture. People like Anthony Marshall, gone. Get rid of the rubbish that's in there and start changing the culture, start buying players that understand the value of playing for Man United. Now the next question is, does the fella in the dugout embrace it? There's no point making that decision now. But nobody wants this job right now. If anyone's going to take this Man United job, they're going to take it in the summer because they're going to get a clean deck. Well, why take it now? So he doesn't need to comment on it, Radcliffe, now.
No.
He just needs to keep his mouth shut and look at what's going on.
OK, let's talk about Ten Hag, because he doesn't believe that the quest for Champions League football is over. This is what he said.
Hope we get up from January and it can be a quick turnaround. And yeah, we have to go into another final and try to get closer to them. And it can be an advantage, and the fifth spot can be also a Champions League spot. We have to go for it. But, yeah, we have to win our games.
The narrative afterwards was that pretty much, and I think Roy said it on the TV yesterday, that there's no chance of top four. 11 points back at this stage of the campaign to Aston Villa. It's unlikely, isn't it? The only thing they're sort of hanging their hat on now is finishing in fifth place and hoping that the coefficient works in their favour, which, again, is not definitely not guaranteed.
No, listen, but what do you expect Ten Hag to come out and say? You know, they've just got thumped by Manchester City. The last thing he's going to come out and say, yeah, it's over, we can't get into fifth, we can't get into the Champions League positions. You know, luckily there's a fifth place that they can
go
for.
But does he really believe it? That's the question.
It's irrelevant whether he believes it. He can't come out and, you know, public and say, oh, well, that's us finishing now, that's our season done.
Do you think they can get into the Champions League?
Listen, you never know. There's so many games to go. I mean, the next 10, 11 games are vital. You know, there's so many tough games to go. So you can't say no. You can't say no. It's going to be tough for him. Let's put it that way.
If Ten Hag came out and said the Champions League is over for us, what do you think the observation would be?
Well, it depends how he said it.
He would get slaughtered.
Not necessarily.
He would get slaughtered. He would have people saying a defeatist mentality, a mentality that exhibits the characteristics that are wrong about Manchester United right now. Players reflect the leadership. Leadership reflects the ultimate equation that's been happening in this club for the last 10 years. He's got to turn around and say, there's still an opportunity and we can still do it. And quite frankly, losing to Man City isn't a blueprint for not getting inside the top four, because they'll beat most sides in the division.
Absolutely, but 11 defeats over the course of the season, not all of them were against Manchester City.
Granted, but we're talking about if you look at their recent form over recent weeks, whilst it hasn't been the most compelling Man United, with a couple of exceptions in there, they've won games that people would have looked at and thought maybe they're struggling. Look, it's Man United, and everything with Man United, I maintain the view, Man United get far too much attention for their performances on the field. And because of their history and because of their legacy and because of their place in the affections and minds of people around the world, Man United get attention. Like, we'll talk about Man United this morning, and even if they, and more people will talk about a Man United loss than they'll talk about a Man City win. That's the nature of Manchester United.
Manchester City 1, Manchester United 1. He got a hat-trick in this fixture last season, and the Stockport Iniesta has just lived up to his nickname, Phil Foden.
I want to get on to Phil Foden and how good he has been. And Pep Guardiola, back page of the papers today, suggesting that he is one of the best players in the Premier League. It's the difference, Paul, between Foden and Rashford's development. The fact that Foden's benefited. I mean, different players, obviously, and different talent levels, maybe. But has Foden benefited from clear, sustained guidance, where Rashford has had five different permanent managers and been sort of raised in that team in a constant state of flux?
Yeah, listen, I think when you kind of look at, you're absolutely spot on with the situation at Old Trafford with the change of managers. Never healthy for a player. All different managers have different ideas where Rashford should play, whether it's on the left, whether it's not play at all, whether it's up front. And he seems to have suffered from that. Listen, as a player, you don't care who the manager is, as long as you're playing, as long as you're in the starting 11. But I think with Phil Foden, I think 3-4 years back, you know, he wasn't in the Manchester City team. And people were saying he needs to go on loan, he needs to go and get games, he needs to go and play in the Championship. And Pep was like, no, he stays with us. He works with the best players and they get his time. And what you're seeing now, in my opinion, you're seeing world-class performances. You know, it's very rare. People use the word great, people use the word world-class, but...
Well, you told me off for calling Marcus Rashford a great player earlier on.
Rashford's not a great player, he's a very good player. You know, potentially, he had the potential to be a great player and still has, but he's 26 now. You know, what I'm seeing in Foden is the performances that he's putting in time after time after time. Great players are not just great players when they do moments. Great players when they consistently do it week after week, month after month, year after year. The Roy Keynes, the Stevie Gerrards, you know, Ryan Giggs, they're great players. Not ones you just do it for one season. But what I'm seeing from Foden at the moment, he can potentially be a world-class player. And you do certain things at certain times when it matters. We're now in the running to the end of the season. It's going to go to the wire. You know, you've got your De Bruynes, you've got all these top players. But now Phil Foden seems to be taking the game by the scruff of the neck. And it's not just his goals that he's scoring. You know, I think it's easy to say people play well when they score a goal. But Phil Foden, his work ethic, the assist that he's doing, the goals, 18 goals I think he's got this year, his actually performances are world class.
Do you think that Marcus Rashford took the game by the scruff of the neck when he smacked that ball in after 8 minutes and everybody thought, wow, that is some response after the statement that he'd given in midweek?
No, not really. No, I don't. I think, first and foremost with Marcus Rashford, I don't think he should have come out and said anything in the first place. I think, you know, criticism is criticism. At that level, any level, if you get criticism, the only way to answer the criticism is by producing it on the pitch. So when he smashed that one in from 25 yards, I thought, here we go, carry on from there.
Absolutely right.
But his performance then deteriorated. You know, he had a great chance when he's put through, when he tried to head it and he headed it down at his feet. Obviously, the foul, that Ten Hag thought was a foul was nowhere near a foul. Mm. He's got to stand on his feet. He's got to be stronger than that. But he's just got to just keep his mouth shut with Rashford and just keep performing on the pitch. He doesn't need to go into the press. He doesn't need to go into social media or his PR team and start putting things out. Just concentrate on your football. And this is the kind of things that are coming out of Old Trafford. These are things that want to come out of Old Trafford if Sir Alex Ferguson was here. You want to have Sancho replying to Ten Hag on a social media platform. It wouldn't have never happened under Fergie. I know we didn't have social media at the time, Simon, but it wouldn't have been allowed.
No, the regime would have been there. The people would have understood where they stand. But going to the Foden point, I think it's probably undeniable that if Marcus Rashford played at Manchester City under Pep Guardiola with a group of players that would give him an example that you'd want to follow, some people like Kevin De Bruyne or Rodri or even Kyle Walker for his on-field performances, when you look around his environment and you look at the culture that he's been brought up in, his talent has probably not progressed because he's not been in the right environment. Now, whether he'd have been good enough to be able to achieve the heights at Manchester City is a debate, because I'm in the same place as Paul. I think he's a very good player. I think this characterisation of him as a world-class player and then judging him by those standards and then beating him when he doesn't get to world-class level because he ain't there in the first place is a stupid narrative anyway. And you look at the decisions that players make. Phil Foden made the right decision because he decided to compromise the fact that he thought he was ready to play in this team for the reality of what the manager thought. Carl Palmer didn't take that decision. It's working out okay for him at Chelsea. Jadon Sancho took a different decision, went to Dortmund, went to Man United, and look where his career has gone at this moment in time. So Foden made a decision based upon not believing that he's arrived before his journey's begun. He had a lot to learn, and he was a very talented player, and the media were clamouring, and the pressure was being built on. This is one of our winners of the World Cup by the under-17s or whatever it was, and he should be in the Man City side. What he's done is learn his trade, and he's earned his right now to be in the conversation, and he's earned his right. He took the opportunity to begin the season because Kevin De Bruyne was injured and staked his claim and made it almost impossible for him to be not considered. And the benefits of it now, for playing in that environment and staying and being a little bit patient rather than getting ahead of yourself, is you've now got a world-class coach, which is undeniable, to use the terminology, world-class with him, influencing players and putting better players around him that have dragged him up by level. If Rashford had been in that environment, I think you'd see a better Rashford now than you're seeing at Manchester United.
Foden said yesterday, I wouldn't say world-class yet. I think I've got the potential to be that, but to hear that from the manager is special for me. Roy Keane saying yesterday on the television that he felt that Gareth Southgate should build the England team around him. Is it as easy as that when you've got Jude Bellingham as well in that midfield?
Well, I will say, you know, when you look at the Euros coming up, you know, we're talking about, I think Jude Bellingham now has got potential to be a world-class player. We've got Harry Kane, who's a world-class striker. We now got Foden, he's got potential. So, you know, whether you build it around Foden, I'm not sure that's the answer, because the thing is, he's got to play. That's crystal clear. There's no debate about that. The question is, where do you play him? You know, as you say, as Simon said, he played in the team role where De Bruyne played and was outstanding. Yesterday you saw him play on the right, then you saw him play on the left. His performance continues to be as good as it was, whatever position he plays. You've got Madison, who's playing now back in at the Spurs team. So for Southie, it's a selection. Where does he actually play, and where does he feel we can get the best out of him? But the future definitely bodes well for us.
Isn't the question for him at England level? When people make these observations about build a team around certain players, and when you've got key players that are capable of operating at high levels, like Bellingham and Foden, you want to think that they're going to be deployed in a certain way. The question with Southgate, are we going to play a brand of football that enables Foden and Bellingham to be where we want them to be? Because if we're going to play the way we normally play, which is a little bit with a degree of handbrake and a pivot and two holding midfield players that react in a certain way, then the Fodens of the world are going to see what they see in England level and when they play for England. You saw Foden playing for England in the World Cup in Qatar in games where he was just anonymous because of the way that Southgate sets him up. If Southgate's brave and says to the Euros, we are potentially the best team in this tournament and we're going to put it on you, then Foden and Bellingham will shine.
I think Simon's right. And the reason why I think that, when you kind of look at these top players and they spend more or less 24-7 with Pep, Klopp, okay, and they're used to doing a certain play in a certain way, you know, and all of a sudden you go to international clubs and they want to play a completely different way. I think, as I've always found that it was easy for me because I just played midfield. So I'm playing some midfield, I know what I'm doing.
So do you think that Gareth should look at getting as many of that Manchester City team as he can, or people that have been brought up in that Manchester City environment as he can in that team?
Well, if you go back to the 80s and 90s, you go back to the Spanish teams, they're full of Barcelona players, Real Madrid players. Right? They all played the same way. The national team played the same way as Real Madrid did and as Barcelona did. England don't play the same way as Manchester City do. or Liverpool do, or Arsenal do. They play completely more reserved.
Could they?
Well, they've got the players to do it, so why shouldn't they? You know, as I said, they play a bit more reserved, England. You know, they really do. You know, they look like a poor counter-attacking team, actually attacking team. But they've got the players to do it. So there is that frustration when you've got someone like Foden, when you've got someone like Bellingham, who week in and week out are performing to the levels that they're performing, then kind of feel that they can't perform that because the way the team's set up doesn't allow them to play the day they want to play.
But they are going to make... The key component of England's team will consist of Manchester City players. Who they're not going to have in the side that's in the side. They're going to have Walker in the side. They're going to have Stones in the side. And they're probably going to have Foden in the side.
Yeah, but
and maybe
suggestion...
they'll have Grealish in there as well, or on the bench. So they're going to have... And the best teams in England, when Liverpool dominated English football, most, and when Man United dominated English football, it tended to be that their players were in the England team.
My question, I suppose, is should they try and play with a little bit more of Manchester City's style injected into them? So Stones maybe stepping into midfield from the centre-back position, maybe including someone like Rico Lewis, someone like Cole Palmer, who have both grown up in that academy.
I get that. But that's not the way Southie sets these teams up. If I said to you, right, Pep's going to now be the manager of England, you'll see a completely different team to England team to what you're seeing now. Mm. It's as simple as that.
There is a red card now being shown by Paul Tierney. Is that to one of the... Is that Stephen Reid from the backroom staff? So Forrest frustrated, of course. They're letting it spill over a little bit here.
So much controversy in the Liverpool victory over Nottingham Forest at the City Ground. A conflicting report about what happened with Marinakis. Did he go down the tunnel and have a go at the referee? Did he not go down the tunnel and have a go at the referee? But he was standing in the mouth of the tunnel after the game, and Virgil van Dijk was almost laughing about the fact that the chairman was on the pitch right at the very end. But it was controversial. There was a debate about it. And afterwards, Nuno Espirito Santo, who is the Nottingham Forest manager, would not get drawn on it.
Come on, please, don't insist on that, please. Please, honestly. Don't insist on that. It will not be good. Please don't insist on that. Let's speak about the game. Let's speak anything about you want, but... That will be discussing point for sure during the week. So we've been speaking over and over again. I hope decisions come better. So let's move forward. Okay.
Well, he didn't need to speak about it because Nottingham Forest employ a refereeing analyst. And that man is Mark Clattenburg, who obviously refereed in the Premier League for a very long time. And he made himself available in the mix zone after the game and said this.
The law is quite clear. The law states that if the referee is going to stop the game, which he's entitled to for a head injury, if he feels that there's a head injury, he's quite rightly allowed to stop the game. However, the ball has to go back to the team that has the possession, and Nottingham Forest clearly had that possession. You know, everybody, you can understand the frustration tonight that things just seem to be going against Nottingham Forest Football Club at the moment, and we just need to hope that this luck changes in the future. I haven't spoken to the referee. I leave that to the officials of Nottingham Forest to do. The owner's quite upset because they fought. You know, he's invested a lot of money in the football club and he wants to see results.
Shut up, Clattenburg.
All right, well, first of all, let me ask you a question. Isn't this clever from Nottingham Forest? Isn't this clever? They can basically say what they want about referees from a position of strength because they've got an ex-referee in their employ who can stand there as a mouthpiece and say it, and no one can get in trouble about it.
No, we've seen this increase in the usage of intelligence surrounding referees. We've got the accusations made against Barcelona for their payment to certain influential people in the refereeing fraternity.
For advice.
For advice, for information, for statistics around refereeing performances. Then you've seen the situation in Roma, where Jose Mourinho had referee advisors. So it's not a new phenomenon. The fact that Clattenburg is a little lickspittle sycophant going out and saying things that probably he would hate to have heard said about him if he was refereeing a game, because a mistake has been made.
Quoting the law, right?
Well, he's quoting the law.
What was wrong with what he said?
Decisions are made and mistakes happen. And we understand, as a former owner, I think it's preposterous to have somebody come out there and start talking about the owner's perspective on this situation, because the owner takes the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. He puts himself in the way of a situation. There's no way an owner should be on the side of a pitch. Whether I agree with the principle or the fact that people should be held accountable for mistakes is a different dynamic. We've seen what happens. We've seen that fellow go on a pitch in Turkey and start kicking a referee. Mm. You know, we need to get the balance right between referees being held accountable.
Involving Ankara Gucci, I think, and Rizespor earlier in the season, where he got punched in the face, didn't he, the referee, by the owner of the football
club. I'm not suggesting Marinakis was anywhere near that territory, but listen, That's not his domain, and he shouldn't be anywhere near it, and he doesn't need to be anywhere near it, and he's making it about his frustrations. That goes with the territory. You have to live with it. I had situations at Palace where goals were scored by my team against Bristol City in a significantly important league game for trying to get promoted to the Premier League. We score a goal, Freddie Sears scores a goal, hits the back of the net, hits the standing behind the goal, we get a goal kick. They get a goal kick. You have to get on with it. Yeah, I was fed up and had a real go at the Bristol City chairman, but that was my place in the boardroom.
Did you ever confront a referee? Did you ever go down to the pitch and get involved in discussions?
I was writing a column for The Observer at the time, and I wrote an article about refereeing standards, and the FA intervened and fined me £10,000 and ended up having a real battle with them.
So you sent someone an email?
No, I didn't send someone an email. I wrote a letter, I wrote an article. I had the pen and I utilised it.
Passive-aggressive, that Simon.
I do think that there's a place and a space, and if you start... move into that space now, you're going to open the door to people like you to turn around and say, oh, it's an interfering chairman. It's a chairman that's got too much to say for himself. Next he'll be in the dressing room. Next he'll be this, next he'll be that, next he'll be the other. I thought the manager handled it well. I ain't going here.
But can he handle it well? Because they've employed a consultant who can come out and say what he wants.
Well, that's what he's there for, isn't he? Clatterbergs. But listen, Simon's absolutely spot on. The chairman, director of football, whoever it may be, stays upstairs. I as a manager, wouldn't want an owner keep coming downstairs. I wouldn't want to see my owner on the football pitch, you know.
Undermines the manager.
Undermining the manager. If there's an issue on a football pitch, it's down to the players, the manager, to deal with. Okay. Not Clattenburg, not the owner. That's as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, so let's go back and have a look at the incident itself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Are you of the opinion that actually there is a major miscarriage of justice here?
Not particularly. I mean, I was obviously, you know, you're like Stato, so you have this sort of information regularly available to you and don't spend your own time in your bedroom with your pants around your ankle reading rule books, right? So I ask you for the information. I think it's an unfortunate set of circumstances, but there's a lot to have happened between that moment and that individual error and Nottingham Forest conceding a goal. I think it's a tragedy for them. They deserve to get something out of that game, but they might want to look at some of the defending in terms of the circumstances that involve getting the goal, allowing McAllister to put the ball back in the box. Yeah. I do think it's unfortunate. I do think it's a tiny matter of timing. If the referee had awarded the transgression at the time, instantaneously, it would have been what it was.
Yeah. I mean, there's two opportunities, actually. He could have awarded a free kick against Ryan Yates for a high foot, which was a possibility. Yeah. If he had blown a couple of seconds earlier and the ball was inside the penalty area, then the drop ball for the goalkeeper would have been the right decision. But because the action was happening outside the box and Nottingham Forest were in possession, he should have handed the ball back there. That was an infraction, but it was 1:56 between that moment and the goal.
This is my point.
Did it not change the momentum?
You can go back in any moment in a game and say, oh, well, Simon got fouled 15 minutes ago. If we'd have given it, it would have changed the momentum of the game.
And he would have wrote an article about
it. No, but what I'm saying, and this is what I'm saying, so yeah, Paul Tierney got it wrong. He got it wrong. But 1:58, Liverpool go and score. Me as a manager, I'll be totally frustrated. The owner's gone mad. Stephen Ridge got sent off. Me looking at that game, I'll be saying to myself and I'll be saying to my players, when the ball came out of the box, why was Awoniyi and Hudson-Odoi trying to dribble out of the box? All right, game management, kick it clear. Then the McAllister thing doesn't happen. Mm. Then you don't lose the game. You pick up a point. That's what I'll be saying as a manager. Yes, there's been a misjustice. I get that. Referees do make mistakes. They will continue to make mistakes. We're talking 1:58. Feel for the Forest fans. They're in the preparer's position at the moment. It's tough down there.
This isn't one incident. John, Nottingham Forest fan, says this, and we've had Adam as well on this subject as well, texting us in 8:10 and 8:09. You can do that. This isn't one incident. Forest have been on the end of way too many bad calls just in the last seven matches. Forest have been had the following shocking decisions. Bournemouth at home, down to 10 men after two scandalous yellows for Bolly. We lost 3-2. Newcastle, 100% a one-year penalty, not given at 1-1. It was a penalty as well. It should have been given in that game. They lost 3-2 in that match. West Ham, 100%. Williams penalty not given. We won 2-0. Brentford away, Tony Cheats moving the free kick 2 yards. We lost 3-2. That did happen.
Hang
but right, you'd
so,
still
so
question
he moved
the goalkeeper
it 2 yards and they lost 3-2.
It is something that's going on and on and on and on. And Clattenburg did say it. He said it in that clip, these things are going against Forest.
He's just mentioned two or three things. One, someone got sent off and they still won
seven
the game.
Seven things he's mentioned.
Well, but two of them that he's mentioned. One, a man got sent off and they won 2-0. Two, the keys moved the ball 2 yards and they lost 3-0.
Can you understand why the owner's upset, though?
I'm sure.
Yeah,
if you asked any team in the Premier League or even in the EFL League to name seven events that happens during the season, I'm sure they could tell you, he got sent off, he shouldn't have got sent off, he should have gone.
The balancing argument is how many decisions have Nottingham Forest got in their favour that have been dubious. Because what people will do is only give you the credit column or the debit column. Yeah. They won't give you the credit column because it advances their argument.
Correct.
There will be decisions that have been made that Nottingham Forest.
Clattenburg's pushing into this argument. He is fueling the narrative that things are going against them. And by being there, he's fueling the narrative.
But if he doesn't, then he doesn't have a job, does he? So ultimately, he's creating an opportunity.
So are they
himself.
Right to do so? I suppose that's the question.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Manchester United in front from an absolute world-class finish from Paul Pogba.
What did you make of the Paul Pogba situation? Because being banned for 4 years is quite some, some suspension. It probably will end up finishing his top-level career, if nothing else. What will his legacy be? And has it damaged it?
Well, listen, has he got a legacy? That's the thing you've got to ask yourself, because...
He's won a World Cup.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, when you kind of look at Paul Pogba now, and, you know, the four-year ban's going to obviously change the way people perceive Paul Pogba. Now, from what I gather, is that obviously the stuff supplement that he took was outside the football club. If I'm right, I might be wrong, but I think I'm right. Mm. So, obviously,
apparently, it was given to him by a doctor in Miami. That's what he's suggesting, isn't he?
Yeah. So, you know, that doesn't look great, you know, for Paul Pogba. You know, he should know better. You know, if he's taking stuff from a doctor that he doesn't really know in Miami, then I know the Italian doctors. I worked in Italy. They're so thorough. They do things right. Everything. So, if this happens to turn into a 4-year ban for Paul Pogba, then I think that's going to be his legacy. I don't think it's going to change. And Paul Pogba, for me, has been potentially could be one of the greatest players of all time. As a midfield player, you know, from obviously from winning the World Cup in 2018, you know, what he did at Juventus, winning 4 Serie A titles, a couple of Coppa Italias. If I look at an all-round midfield player, what would I expect from him? I'd expect someone like Paul Pogba. 6'2", 6'3", 2 great feet, can score goals, can get up and down the park, can tackle, all the attributes that you want from a midfield player. And, you know, when he left Juventus to go back to United, I'm not sure that was the right move. I think Juventus were flying. I think he was flying at Juventus, didn't need to go back there. The issues with Mourinho that came out, you know, they didn't get on. There was an ego battle between the two of them. And then under Ollie, started to thrive a bit under Ollie, and then obviously moved back to Juventus where, you know, he's not played since February. So, and if this hangs over him at the age of 31, 32, I think you're talking 36. You know, you're not saying that his career's over. Listen, he might go and play in Saudi at 36. He might go and play at the MLS. But as far as remembering Paul Pogba, yes, you remember him as a 2018 World Cup winner. But this hangs over his head. You know, it wouldn't be a nice legacy to think about.
Graham Sinis has been criticised and has been criticising Paul Pogba often during his career, and he was talking to Simon on their podcast in regards to Paul Pogba.
Why I was critical of him, he had the equipment to be the best midfield player in the world. and I saw a young man who was going through emotions a lot of the time, and that frustrated me. With that physique, with the technical ability, he just didn't have the right attitude to the game to make him become a superstar. The worst thing that happened to him, winning a World Cup, where he could turn and say, I'm a World Cup winner. I think at that point, it was him going backwards.
That was on the Simon and Souness show, which I think is out today on YouTube. That's right. Yeah, it is indeed. You'll be able to see that. He also said what you said, didn't he, there about being a great player that probably could have been better than he was. He says in his column this week as well, Graham, he says, I criticise Paul Pogba often during his career and some people seem to take amusement from it. But actually, it was only sadness that I felt this week when I learned that he has been banned for football for 4 years for a doping offence. For me, there was never really any doubt about Pogba's ability. What I saw was a player with great technical ability and physique who had the potential to be one of the best midfield players our sport had ever known. Do you feel like that?
Yeah, I do. I do, and I think it's a bit like, you know, someone mentioned about Dylan White, you know, getting cleared of his drug issues, and hopefully Paul Pogba can do the same, because, I mean, 4 years is a long time. So it's a big, big, it's a hefty ban. You know, I mean, we were talking about some athlete taking the same drug, Diarra, and he got a six-month ban. Mm. Paul Pogba's got 4 months, 4 years, sorry. Are they setting an example? I don't know. But one thing about Pogba...
That's the default setting.
Is it?
With a WADA, with a drug fail under WADA, it's a four-year ban, and then you do it on appeal. And if you can provide enough coherent evidence as to the reasons why this was not something you took as a regime and it was a mistake, then you'll get it reduced to perhaps two and lower. Mm. But he's done, isn't he? Even if he gets it down to 2 years, he's done in mainstream football. But it's not just that, Sam. Look at the way, look at the situations that the boy's got himself in. He's got his brother blackmailing him.
Yeah, he's had it. People around aren't right, are they?
Yeah.
The way the whole saga, the Pogba saga, has run since the middle of that Manchester United period, I think, has been very difficult.
But you've
for
heard
him.
From two of the greatest midfielders that this Isles have produced, Souness and Paul Ince, about their same view, which is that he had all the equipment to be one of the best players that stepped on the field in that position. And Graham's frustration, and people ridiculed it and parried it and said Souness's obsession with Pogba. You don't waste time on people that you have no regard for. Mm. You only comment on people that you think, God, my God, look at this. You could be doing this and you're doing that. So you've heard from him, Paul, and you've heard from Graham saying pretty much the same thing. He had all the equipment to be the best player in the world or in that position. And he's kind of not delivered outcomes that could have been, you know, when there's nothing worse than waste, is there? When someone's got talent and you waste it, that's the most frustrating thing.
Download, stand well back, listen. Outspoken with White and Jordan from the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts from. Jim will be back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.